Nick, how are we doing today?
Doing well, Jonathan. I'm excited to be in here with you. I think this is my first like live YouTube like show, you know, like here. So it's cool. Okay. It's cool.
Hello. Hey, good thing you said here, because I think you live on YouTube and other places?
Yes. I'm plenty familiar with the YouTube game.
And YouTube's familiar with you,
I would imagine. YouTube's familiar with me, I think.
Can you bring some crossover? Is this kind of like, you know how in sitcoms back in like the 70s and the 80s, they would just mix it up and all of a sudden you'd have like, I can even go even further than Happy Days and I Love Lucy or something like that. And you have like they would just be a mixed bag. Is that what this is for you right now?
Kinda.
Or at least for the YouTube world?
At least for the YouTube world, yeah.
They're like, wait, what is he doing on this version of YouTube?
On this YouTube, yeah.
I actually do like that. I watch a lot of YouTube golf videos. As evidenced by the fact that I'm still enraged by the idea that he called it fixing a divot on the green. It's a pitch mark, but I'm not going to go down that road. That we don't have to do that. We did the horticulture and everything attached to it yesterday. But like my golf people, they'll constantly switch up on different YouTube channels. And yeah. So like the Brian Bros will all of a sudden go with the foreplay guys, and then they'll go with, with Grant Horvat, and then they'll go with, and I like when that happens. I like that that's a thing in that space where it feels like everyone's constantly just mishing and meshing with everyone.
It is cool. A lot of collabs over on the YouTube stream.
A lot of collabs. I feel like if you have a YouTube in general, like a YouTube account, the idea that comes with it is you have to constantly be collaborating.
Even like Mr. Beast, who's like the top of the YouTube game, like he's bringing on other YouTubers, and it's like, you don't probably need to do that. Like you're Steve Harvey of YouTube. Like there's nobody bigger than you, and he still brings on like smaller people. So it is cool.
Well, it's like the ethos of what YouTube is, right? Is that like at the heart of it? Is that kind of like when I do a radio hit in Sacramento?
Is that
what that is? Although I feel like when I do a radio hit in Sacramento, I'm just wasting time and helping them, you know, take care of 15 minutes.
Yeah, what are they asking you about in Sacramento? That's the thing.
Well, oddly enough, I turned down Sacramento. We had a little bit of a dispute on this show itself. Sacramento asked me to do a radio hit. I said no to Sacramento, and then they immediately went to Nick after me, and then Nick agreed to do the hit.
Wow.
And so I said, you got my Sacramento sloppy seconds.
But what were they asking? I wish...
It's always Shador.
Oh, so they care about that in Sacramento?
They care about it. Yeah, really, so what's interesting about this, the only times I've been hit up is for national hits, and then obviously little spots around the country, and it's just Shador for this year.
Yeah.
Now, in years past, anytime there's, because here's the thing, usually I get asked to do those when it's like the Browns are on like a Thursday night game, or even a Monday night game, because then in the local, whatever cities, not even the ones that are playing in the game, but just in general, they're like, all right, we're talking about the Browns, because they're on that night. And so you get asked to do some of those in different cities across the country when that happens. But the Browns have had we didn't have a Thursday night game this year. We didn't have a Monday night game this year.
So I was getting hit up a good bit over the summer when I was kind of doing, I felt like I was leading the charge of the Come Home LeBron stuff. So I felt like anybody that wanted to talk like the LeBron Cleveland angle, like I was the go-to. So I was doing that a bunch. Like I felt like every day I had a different like phone call somewhere different. It was cool. I like doing that kind of stuff. But like you're saying,
it
hasn't really happened ever since, though.
So what I learned, though, this is the difference, though. So like YouTube collabs is fun because YouTube exists in that space. And so if you're on YouTube, you're going to see the different collabs, right?
Yeah.
A person in Cleveland, which is the only people I care about in my radio career at this point, and what I imagine then for the next 30 years or whatever it ends up being, I only care about Cleveland people.
Yeah, that's true.
So, like, if I go in Sacramento, I don't really care that a person in Sacramento thinks that I have a great Browns take.
Yeah.
That matters so little to me. That's kind of the problem I had with, like, the Infinity Sports Network stuff that I was doing, was although that was fun, and I enjoyed doing that because it's a great experience. I did it for 5 years, once a week for 5 years. I enjoyed it. I had fun with it. But, like, ultimately, the payoff was just, when we had shows, some shows would be aired here on The Fan, but if we had local programming, I was like, well, what am I doing the show for? To impress somebody in Arkansas? Like to impress somebody in Montana? Like that doesn't do it for me. Even in like the big cities that it would clear in, it's like I don't care that a Detroit sports fan thinks I had a good take.
Well,
that doesn't do anything for me.
I think it's different, too, because, like, we live in Cleveland. We're, like, here, like, when the Browns win, when the Browns lose, like, it is Browns front page news all the time.
Yeah.
But, like, in Sacramento, like, are they really, like, is the Ken Carmen of Sacramento, the morning after a Kings loss, going on air and just wreaking havoc?
Oh, you know they are, yeah.
You think?
Oh, for sure. Not even a question.
Over the Kings?
Not even a question. Yeah. Because, like, that's what they do.
Dude, that's a tough existence.
If we didn't have the Browns, okay, if the Browns had left in 95 and had never come back,
yeah.
You and me would be losing our minds over what's happening with the Cavs right now. We would be. We'd be going crazy over, why aren't the Guardians making off-season moves?
Yeah.
Why aren't they spending money?
It's a crazy thought.
We would be talking about these things 24-7 because that would be our existence. It's what we'd care the most about. We'd still sprinkle in the NFL because the NFL is king.
Right.
Part of this, though, is if you're a city without an NFL team, I'm sorry, it just stinks. For you, that stinks. And I know, obviously, we went through that for 4 years in the 90s. I get it. But, and looking back on it with how crazed of a fan base the Browns are and Cleveland is for football, it still blows my mind that they could ever take this team away and not instantly have not only people rioting, but people being like, what the hell is going on here?
Yeah.
This is such a great football city, and they care. Everyone here cares about football in such a great degree. It still blows my mind thinking that it ever happened or was allowed to happen to begin with.
It's a sickness, dude. So one of my best friends lives in San Diego, and they kind of have the same thing where they keep a pulse on what's going on with the Chargers, but it's like, You can't really fully embrace it because that's not your team anymore.
I went to school in St. Louis, and the Rams were still there at that time, and then I watched them leave, and a lot of my good friends they've now switched. They're either Bears fans or they're Chiefs fans. They just had to make up a new call.
But
they're not the same football city. That's a baseball city. You know what I mean? Like St. Louis is a diehard baseball city. You go to anyone's house in June, anyone's house, and they have a Cardinals game on.
Yeah,
you know?
It's not preseason. Think about here, when there's preseason Browns games on at the same time as regular season Guardians games, if you go into somebody's house, it's going to be preseason Browns.
Yeah, so anyway, we get to thank our lucky stars, basically, is the point here, because we get to talk about sports in a city that has a football team and has a passionate fan base, and even through what has turned out to be a really awful season, all things considered, we still have topics every single day, we still have things to discuss every single day, and even things like yesterday with that report involving Jeremy Fowler and Kevin Stefanski, we can still react off of that, and that's where we're going to start today with you guys. By the way, Daryl Ryder joining us at 3:20, Tate Seth, my guy from Sumer Analytics, he'll join us at 5:40. But I want to hear from you guys. 216-474-0092. You said something interesting in the pre-show meeting. We're talking about whether or not this could be Kevin Stefanski's last game as a Browns head coach. I maintain he's going to have the rest of the season. I always think there's not anybody more popular in sports than the interim head coach. It just sets up really bad. The backup quarterback, typically. It just sets up really badly. If you name somebody the interim head coach, and we've seen it here before, obviously, Greg Williams has made a whole case of the idea that he won 5 games as an interim and then didn't get the head coaching job. But if you win as an interim head coach, you have a real runway to make a case.
Especially if you have a cool tagline. Come get some.
Yeah. Was that cool?
At the time, I felt like everybody was saying it.
Ken once did his all 2000s and up Browns team or whatever it was.
Yeah.
I remember pissing him off. It was 4 or 5 years ago. I think maybe 3 or 4 years ago, actually. I made Greg Williams the head coach. Because I was like, he's the winningest head coach by a percentage. His winning percentage, he actually had the most wins. He did what he had to do. I think he went 5-2, 5-3, whatever that was.
What an era of catchphrases that was. Because we went from come get some to the if you don't wear brown and orange, you don't matter. Man, it was
a whoopty hell.
I mean, the great times for the local t-shirt economy.
Well, and then Freddie Kitchens was wearing the local t-shirts.
Pittsburgh started it.
The whole everything. He was a content machine.
You talk about a content machine.
Yeah, but he was an idiot, though. He was Alabama Jim Tomsula, and everybody knew it.
Oh, yeah.
The problem with that is that we all knew it was going to fail, and we just watched anyway. But you notice in that stretch why so many people were like, Greg Williams has to be the guy. And I'll never forget debating with people, because the other name that was in hot consideration was Mike McCarthy at the time.
Yep.
And there was a lot of convos about, can you do this with Mike McCarthy? And I remember ringing up the 2015 NFC title game, where I think he single-handedly cost the Packers that entire game. You have Aaron Rodgers as your quarterback, and you are running like crazy in the second half. You blow a 15-point lead. There are so many things I was just able to reference for McCarthy being a dodo, basically. And then you fast forward, and it's like, well, geez. Maybe they should have done that. Maybe they should have went down that road. But at the time, that was it. It was like Greg Williams was getting serious run. And so that is part of the problem. If you actually make an interim head coaching move, and this is a short amount of time, but let's say they go Tommy Rees instead of Jim Schwartz, and then all of a sudden the light bulb goes off for Shedeur Sanders, and let's say he's great against Chicago and you snipe off a win there, or he's great against Buffalo and you snipe off a win there, people in NFL circles already think Tommy Rees is going to be a head coach one day. You can see where the momentum's going. And so the choice gets removed from your hands. And that's why I feel like it won't happen.
So I felt that same exact way for really the exact same reason. And it's kind of crazy. Like, my big thing has always been, if you're firing a head coach and if you're going to go the interim route, you might as well name the strength coach the interim head coach. Somebody that just has no chance of being, you know, of winning that job, having that Tommy Rees effect.
Like the Raiders
happen.
Did, yeah.
Yeah.
Although, by the way, then he almost won the
right,
you know.
Right. That almost went that way. Rich Bisaccia, you know, uh-huh. was what that was. I felt that same way until yesterday. And when that Jeremy Fowler report came out in ESPN, the timing of that felt so weird to me. I was like, for that report to come out now, in the middle of the first week of December, when you still got 5 regular season games to go, you have a very winnable game in front of you with the Tennessee Titans coming to town. It made me realize something went off inside my brain. I was like, if there was ever a time for it to happen during the regular season, I do think it would be Monday.
It's the most embarrassing loss you have left on the schedule.
It would, like,
not even close.
Like, if you win Monday and then you could lose out the rest of them, they'll let them play out the string, I truly believe. But, like, with everything that went into Wyatt Teller's benching. Mm-hmm. Now I've got Bubba Ventrone saying that I don't have enough talent on the roster and that they're standing by Gage Larvadan for kickoff, despite the fact that he muffed 2 of punts. Like, all of this culminates into, man, if Sunday goes south, like, that could be it.
So there is the other side of this, too, is that he's still, and there's a part of my brain, and I'm putting this at like a 5 to 10% chance that Stefanski is just doing the bidding of what they want in the front office, and he is executing the plan, right? And the plan being win as few amount of games as you possibly can, and we're going to try to set this thing up. I almost had Nick in what I think might have been close to a checkmate as we get on these conversations when talking about, like, all right, well, why would Stefanski go along with the bid and what evidence do you have is essentially the conversation. And it's like, well, think about it. 10-8 game last week. You're close at the half. It's a 2-point game. Yep. And then what do the Browns end up doing? You go for 4th and 1 on the 30-yard line with a rookie tight end in a play that was hurried from the beginning. Like, all these things start to accumulate and you start to look at it and say, maybe he's just doing the bidding. So there is an avenue that exists out there where Stefanski is just doing what they're telling him to do, and he's the in-game part of it that they can control, and so a loss has to be on the table. And instead of saying bad job at the end of this one, they say great, handshakes all around, you executed the plan. Whereas we look like we want our pound of flesh, you need to be fired after this game. There's like a 5 to 10% chance him and everybody else around the Browns secretly go upstairs and say, all right, to tankathon, oh, we still, now we have a top 5 pick. Now we're in the driver's seat to get that quarterback that we want.
Oh, that just feels gross.
I mean, this is the franchise that paid Hugh Jackson bonuses for losses.
It is.
During a 2-year season where you, a 2-year stretch where you won one game. Like, there's nothing above this franchise to what they'll do to go ahead and make sure that they go ahead and get the draft pick that they want.
It just feels gross because just, like, don't lie to me. Don't even lie to me. I don't care about myself. Like, don't lie to the fans. Like if that's truly what's going on, then Jimmy Haslam shouldn't have said in the preseason that we know what better looks like and we have to be better than 3 wins. 3 wins isn't going
to
cut it.
I'm not going to hold Jimmy Haslam's words to, you know, be anything sort of credible, okay? Like, the man has proven through his professional career and then through this Brown stretch as well that he'll say just about anything at any given point.
You're not wrong. It's just, that's gross.
I can tell you're, it's like sitting into you right now. You're like having this realization that there is a tiny chance that that is what's happening. And if that is the case, that's sad. The other part of this, though, and probably the more likely side of this, is what you're alluding to. The idea that they are trying to win these games and they are just a bunch of dodos and not able to pull it off. And if that is the case, then yes, I think everything has to be on the table. Do I think it's going to happen, though, Nick? That's where I'd say no. 216-474-0092. I think Stefanski gets the rest of the season. Nick's saying it's 100% on the table that on Monday, if they lose this game, we are talking about Stefanski being fired and the Jeremy Fowler report being at the heart of that one. Is this the type of game that a loss does, in fact, get people fired? It's Nick Padone, Jonathan Peterlin here with you on The Fan.